If you'd like to listen to our podcasts without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, enhanced show notes for select shows, and more. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or the first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code ECLIPSE to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code ECLIPSE. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the DSR Daily. I'm David Rothkopf, joined as ever by Chris Kottmeyer. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, thanks.
And Riley Fessler, how are you, Riley?
Not too bad.
You're lying. You have a cold. I have a cold. We're both suffering, struggling here, but we didn't want to leave Chris all alone. So we will muddle through, our brains and backed up by the symptoms. Maybe it's allergies. I don't know. Chris, are you a doctor? What is this that's we're suffering?
I am not, but I play one on TV.
Yeah, that's true. You devote a lot of attention to your health. Well, why don't you start us off with a story?
At Columbia University, student protesters escalated their pro-Palestinian demonstrations by occupying Hamilton Hall, demanding the university divest from Israel and provide financial transparency and amnesty. This occupation, named Hind Hall after a young victim in Gaza, follows the university's suspension of students who refused to leave an encampment on campus grounds. Amidst failed negotiations and university warnings, the standoff threatens to disrupt the upcoming commencement, reflecting a broader wave of similar protests and arrests across other campuses, including the University of Texas at Austin, where police responded with arrests and pepper spray.
Yeah, this group of demonstrations has clearly triggered all sorts of opinions and feedback out there. There are some folks who are trying to say it's all supporting Hamas and backed by Iran. That's a gross exaggeration, but some people are trying to make it look that way. There's some governors like Abbott in Texas who are trying to use this to make themselves look tough, but all you end up with is videos of police brutality. There are a variety of college presidents who are offering up different kinds of guidelines and principles to promote free speech and the right to demonstrate while not disrupting the universities too much. These vary, and some university presidents are having better luck with it than others. Certainly in my alma mater, Columbia, problem is getting worse. There's a long tradition in Columbia of occupying Hamilton Hall, which is where the college administration, as well as many classes, are. This was one of the buildings occupied in 1968 during riots that took place then, or demonstrations that took place then. And I don't think we're close to the end of these events. Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday said they'll be going into Rafah one way or another. That's likely to trigger more such events. The ICC is considering charges against Netanyahu. That may trigger it, et cetera. The one thing I would say is the people who are trying to dismiss this as all very fringy or not representing mainstream views, I think they're trying to persuade themselves of something. There is clearly something happening within younger communities that shows real discomfort with the traditional level of support for Israel. I don't think intimidating or shouting at the demonstrators is going to fix it. I think at the end of the day, it's going to take a change in the policies and behavior of the Israeli government, the U.S. government, and others. Clearly, everybody's looking for that. Riley?
In Georgia, the country, not the state, intense public and political strife surrounds the proposed foreign agents bill, which is poised for a critical vote in parliament. It mirrors the controversial Russian legislation and demands registration of entities receiving over 20% of their funding from abroad as foreign agents, a move criticized for stifling civil liberties and dissent. This has sparked a massive protest in Tbilisi with tens of thousands expressing opposition and the ruling Georgian Dream Party countering with substantial support rallies. Despite the president's threat to veto, the party claims enough votes to override, indicating likely passage. The scenario intensifies debates around Georgia's democratic trajectory, its relations with Russia, and the implications for its EU membership aspirations.
Ukraine is not the only place Russia has tried to enter and influence and pull into its orbit more closely. Georgia's on the list. Moldova, which we discussed yesterday, is on the list. People have been taking to the streets because they do not want to see the country go that way. It will be many months, likely longer than that, before this is resolved. But it is a useful reframer to say, hey, this is Russian foreign policy to acquire influence and territory in neighboring states. It's not a one-off or an aberration. Chris?
The first week of Donald Trump's hush money trial set the stage for a detailed examination of alleged illegal activities aimed at influencing the 2016 presidential campaign by suppressing negative stories. Manhattan prosecutors are presenting evidence to demonstrate how Trump and his allies orchestrated payments to silence accusations of past sexual encounters, specifically with porn performer Stormy Daniels. Witnesses, including Trump's former executive assistant and the former National Enquirer publisher, provided insights into the operations within Trump's circle. The trial, where Trump faces 34 felony counts related to falsifying business records, continues amidst his ongoing political activities and is marked by his vocal frustrations over proceedings which he claims are designed to affect the upcoming election.
Right. He's like saying, oh, I can't. This is to keep me from campaigning. I can't campaign if they've got me in the courtroom. And then the weekend rolls around and the day off rolls around. And what does he do? He goes out and he plays golf. He doesn't actually get on the campaign trail. This gets to kind of one of the core issues at this trial, and that is not a legal issue. It's how does Trump, who Biden at the White House Correspondents' Dinner referred to as a six-year-old, handle this? He's just not good at having other people in charge, but he's put himself in this position. We're going to hear more from prosecution witnesses this week, beginning today. They have to prove two things, not just that he falsified business records, as Chris suggested, but also that he did so in pursuit of the commission of another crime, because that's how you get falsifying business records to become a felony. And the other crime is election law violation, an attempt to illegally influence the outcome of the 2016 election. And that's frankly why this trial is not a hush money trial. It's not a porn star trial. It's a trial about exactly what all the other trials are about, which is Trump's trying to steal power. And if they can prove it, then he's going to have some real problems, particularly given the percentage of independents who say they will not vote for Trump if he is convicted of a felony. Riley?
The European Commission has initiated an investigation into Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, for allegedly failing to effectively address deceptive advertising and disinformation ahead of the European Parliament elections. Scrutiny stems from the Digital Services Act, which they have used to crack down on several companies so far, and mandates that tech giants mitigate illegal and harmful content on their platforms or face potential fines up to 6% of their global annual turnover. Concerns have been raised about both external and internal sources of disinformation, including efforts from Russia, China, Iran, and some EU political entities. The commission criticized Meta for insufficient moderation, a lack of transparency in its advertising and content moderation processes, and the phasing out of its disinformation tracking CrowdTangle tool without a viable replacement, all of which undermine efforts to monitor civic discourse and election integrity in real time.
The initial mistake came from the United States in the 90s when we decided not to call these organizations media companies, and thus they were able to escape kind of regulation that media companies had and shirk some of the responsibilities media companies have. The United States has not adjusted sufficiently from this, but the Europeans are leading the way. I know this is hard on you, Chris, because you hate it when anybody goes after big tech. You love big tech. But they could do a little more. You can't object to this, can you?
No, I don't. I object to the ban of TikTok, though, but that's for another day.
I totally object to that as well. Hopefully somebody will buy it. Hopefully that person will not be Steve Mnuchin. But it is ridiculous to have privacy and security policies created company by company as opposed to across the board pertaining to all companies. This is just China bashing, part of a big trend that is, sort of gaining momentum again here in Washington, where people want to portray us as being in a Cold War with the Chinese. And it's not that simple. You got a story for us here, Chris? Last story?
I do. President Biden and his administration are seizing a critical opportunity to broker a ceasefire in Gaza, aiming to halt the conflict amid escalating pressures, with several converging factors, including Israel's successful defense against Iranian attacks and public pressure in Israel for hostage releases. The U.S. is hopeful for a breakthrough. Secretary of State Blinken has been active in the Middle East, negotiating with Arab leaders to support an extraordinarily generous Israeli offer, while also addressing broader regional goals like a security pact and nuclear assistance with Saudi Arabia, contingent on progress toward a Palestinian state. Amidst these efforts, potential complications arise from ongoing Israeli military actions in Gaza and impending international criminal court actions against Israeli officials. Domestically, Biden faces pressures from protests on college campuses, impacting his political landscape as he navigates these intense diplomatic efforts.
Secretary Blinken has been in the region pushing it. Biden has been calling people. The deal is, as Blinken said yesterday, one that has, quite generous terms. As far as Hamas goes, I think it calls for something like the release of 33 Israeli hostages from the women, children, and elderly category. In exchange, Israel will release something like 4,000 Palestinians who've been incarcerated in Israel. Quite a favorable rate for the Palestinians. There seems to be some early indications that the Palestinians are a little bit more open to this. Meanwhile, you have yesterday Netanyahu saying, we're going into Rafah anyway, which seems to be designed to say, maybe we're not as committed to ceasefire as this deal says. There's also some talk that this deal involves a longer ceasefire, perhaps as long as a year. So we're at a fragile point, once again, in these talks. The United States and the world would like nothing better than for the fighting to stop for a protracted period of time and for the focus to turn to humanitarian issues. Where the Israeli government stands on this is unclear. We will be keeping you up to date on this and everything else, along with the regular podcasts we produce each and every day. So go and join us for them. If you don't know what they are, go to the DSRnetwork.com. Go to our, you know, freshly redesigned website. Look around, see if there's something that looks good to you, and listen to it. And we'll be back again here tomorrow. Until then, thanks, Chris. Thanks, Riley. Thanks to everybody for joining us. Bye-bye.